Hi everyone, welcome to this week's episode of Open Source Spaces at Microsoft. Today we're here with Brady Gaster and David Justice, and they both work on AutoREST at Microsoft. So we'll start by just asking them, tell us about yourselves and what do you both work on, kind of more in depth about AutoREST.
Sure. Brady, you want to kick it off?
Well, I depend on you, so you should probably kick it off.
All right, thanks, Sarah. Appreciate it. I'm David Justice. Hi. I work on Azure SDKs and AutoREST and trying to build out the best open source tooling that we can for Azure. I guess before this, before Microsoft kind of, I guess, startup land, did an early engineer on a mobile security application, big data. It was kind of cool. And then co-founder of a dev tools company, technical co-founder. It was really fun, and it's actually gotten even more fun since I've been here and able to work with you, Brady.
He does that all the time. I'm Brady Gaster. I used to be on the AutoREST team and the SDK team. Still on the overall Azure SDK team. When you say Azure SDK, you're literally talking about, like, I think every company here except for Windows and Xbox, pretty much. So there's a lot of different teams that contribute to the SDK. David came into the team as the PM for the AutoREST team, and then I immediately took a dependency on him. He didn't know that this was coming. It was kind of a trick play. Now Visual Studio, specifically the web tools for Azure, the stuff that my team puts out, we actually have a dependency on AutoREST. We use the AutoREST code generation stuff from within VS. So if you've ever done, if you've ever been in a project and you've gone to add and then REST API client, the thing that we use to actually consume Swagger or OAS I'm just going to call it both from here on out, that actually parties on top of AutoREST. So we're actually using that stuff. It's pretty cool, pretty good stuff. We're definitely not using it to its full capability, but David has more information on that later. So,
Great. Mm-hmm. So let's backtrack a little bit. For those of you tuning in, let's talk about what AutoREST is exactly, if they don't know what AutoREST is.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool.
It's this thing right here.
That's beautiful.
And we have some more. Lots.
So I think I'll field this one. Yeah. So AutoREST was kind of our solution to a big REST problem that we have here at Azure, and I think a lot of big companies as a whole. So what AutoREST gives us is this ability to generate code from API specifications. And when you talk about API specifications, I mean, what is that really? It's, we wanted to have a way to specify what our HTTP endpoints looked like, what kind of data they gave back, what kind of data they took in, and what operations they provided. And then we needed to take all of these huge number of services that we have in Azure and produce code in all of these different languages, like, you know, C Sharp, Java, Ruby, Golang, Python, Node, all of these. To do that by hand would have been a terribly mountainous task.
The way Wilcox described it, I mean, Jeff Wilcox, one of the guys that kind of had this inception idea, so to speak, was he said, I remember when I was interviewing for the job that you now have, at one point he said to me, he goes, how many partners do you think we have in Azure? I was like, what do you mean by partner? He goes, how many services? I'm like, 30. And he goes, okay, let's go ahead and say it's 80. Because that's closer to reality. He goes, let's say it's 80. He said, how many languages can you name off the top of your head that we need to support? It's 3. Node, Java, and PHP, or Python at that point. And he was like, okay, imagine the exponential problem that we're going to have when new partners come online and we get in 100, 120, 150, and we have to have SDKs in all those languages. How do we do that?
Did your stomach turn at that point?
Oh, pretty much, yeah. So, well, how many devs do we have? How many teams do we have? Because we have 5 devs and 3 QA. I'm like, I don't think I want this job anymore. Can we talk about something else? He goes, yeah, we're talking about AutoREST. So that's when, and it wasn't called AutoREST then. That's the third name. We won't give one of the other two names. But that was how this whole thing started. It was like, we have to have a way to get out of this problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you came in and like unicorned it.
Oh, you're my hero.
Yes.
So it's basically taking specifications mm-hmm. and turning them into code in all these different languages. Mm-hmm. So that's really cool. But what was it? It kind of had some history there before these specifications themselves were in like this compiled C# form that we would actually reflect on and pull metadata from to create APIs. It sounds a little convoluted.
It was really weird. And what made it even weirder? And like, I'm a big C# guy. Everybody knows I'm on the ASP.NET team, and I love C# and .NET. But one of the problems that we had, we were trying to take this code gen tool, and we'll call it the snake, because that's what we called it at first. It had a different name, but it's very snake-like. So we took this product, and we basically gave it to our internal developers, and it pretty much had a domain-specific language all written in C#. It's very heavily laden with attributes. Interestingly enough, one of the problems that we were trying to solve was that people don't like and don't understand WCF attributes. But our framework had 3 times more attributes that nobody could figure out how to use interchangeably than did WCF.
Yep.
So we sort of went full circle, and we had partners going, you know, if this worked and it was easier to use, we would totally love it. Why did you do it this way? So then we started asking more questions. Yeah.
Yep. So that kind of led us to building on a different specification format.
Yes, a different specification. Yeah. Yes, which I'm just going to call it Swagger, because that's what it was at that time. I know it's got a new name now. But what we ended up doing was we took a long, hard look at all the email threads where we were discussing, should we use this in T4? Should we build our own Dizzle? Should we use insert thing here? Yeah. What should we do? And I began speaking with some people in Microsoft OpenTech, and they said, well, have you looked at API Blueprint? Have you looked at YAML? Have you looked at FRAML? Have you looked at Swagger? And that's the one that I'd heard of. So we took a pretty deep look at Swagger. And at that time, we were also working on the next generation of Azure App Service, which was going to have a pretty heavy component around REST APIs called API Apps. And we knew that we were going to have some description needs, some API description needs. And you guys probably are younger than me, so you don't remember the days of WSDL and SOAP. I think you might have done that in kindergarten or something.
I think it was preschool, actually.
It was preschool? Okay. Yeah. So well, that's kind of how it feels now, you know. But we wanted something that easy. And I always have to bring up Mads in this conversation, because Mads and I are two of the tooling PMs. And Matt said, you know, what was great about web services and SOAP? Like people loved the tooling around mm-hmm. web services and SOAP. He said, people love REST APIs in spite of the tooling. And that sort of struck a chord.
Yep.
So Mads and I got into a room, and we started talking about what the next generation of ad service reference would look like. And we started talking, at first we wanted to have providers so that we sit on top of Swagger and RAML and blah, 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 blah. One day we'll do that, I think. But with such momentum growing at that time around Swagger, we began talking to the MSOT folks. Yep. Then we started talking to Tony Tam, our good buddy in the Swagger group, and started learning that looked like a pretty legitimate option. It was very heavy in other communities like Java and Ruby. And right about that time, David walked. And I said, well, you're familiar with Ruby, and you know all this stuff, and you've been in the open source community. What do you think about Swagger? And it was like light bulbs went off. So David and I put our heads together. And it was a lot of very interesting political conversations and a lot of very interesting technical conversations. And for a lot of teams, it was a complete change in direction. But we got them to start using it. And we basically changed from the Autorest concept being a C# Dizzle to being a domain-specific language. You always pick me when I do that. From being a C# Dizzle to being a Swagger-based thing. So now we would feed Autorest Swagger, and we would get code out of it. And then David started looking at the code that we were spewing out of Autorest, and he threw up a little bit, and he said, this is never going to work. So then he went back to the team, and that's when things really started to kind of pick up and evolve.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, we got Autorest to the point where our partners and our customers didn't have disdain for it, but it was still like tolerated. And then when David came in, he actually made it pretty useful and improved the contracts gratuitously and improved the flavor development, which I'll let you talk about next, like what a flavor is and how you've done this. I think you've even changed the name of that too. But at some point it went from being kind of a research project that somebody built in their closet for 18 months to being something that the teams not only began to use, but began to rely on.
Yeah, and that's really cool to take those specification formats from this really closed source internal thing into something that is more of a open standard. In fact, now even more so an open standard as part of the Open API initiative and part of the Linux Foundation. This is huge that we will actually have all of our REST APIs specified in this open format. And to your point about the flavors, it's not just about producing code that functions. Mm-hmm. It's about producing code that's idiomatic to each individual language. So we don't want to see Python code that isn't Pythonic. We don't want to see it come out looking like C sharp. We want Ruby to look and feel like Ruby. We want Python to look and feel like Python.
And TypeScript and Java.
Precisely. Precisely. Mm-hmm. All of these things should act the way that they should behave and be written as though they were written by hand, not necessarily by a computer. And really, that's our goal. It's kind of a lofty goal. It's very difficult to do that well across all languages, but I think we're getting there. I really do. And doing it on this totally open, structure, this allows us to enable customers to generate code either with AutoREST or from something like Swagger CodeGen, another awesome project that's out there. So by basing it on these open formats, we're really unlocking the power of the REST APIs to generate whatever you want. And I think that's really the power of building in the open source and using these tools that are shared across the environment. We are causing more flowers to blossom, mm-hmm. perhaps.
Mm-hmm. And you should introduce the idea that we at least one of the partner teams, one of the service teams, they began to use Swagger as the way that they would put Swagger kind of in their build process. Do you have more knowledge on that one?
Yeah, so
I've
this
heard
is
about
really
it in the hallway.
Cool.
It's pretty cool.
Yes. So
just think of the history, okay? We had this horrific dizzle that nobody wanted to use, and they could see the merit to it, and they could understand, like, the thing that comes out of it, like, you know, is way better than like what we had to, you know, the amount of work we would have to put in to get it before that. But we don't like the way the Dizzle works, and we don't understand this Swagger thing, and we don't know why you're going into this open source world, and oh God, these hippies and yada yada. And then a partner team comes to David and they say, guess what we're doing now?
Yeah. So I guess I'll name the partner team the web apps team.
The app services team.
They embedded Swashbuckle, a open source project that will generate Swagger based on your web API. Mm-hmm. And they put it into their build system so that it generates Swagger upon build and then generates out the client. So this client is generated out with AutoREST and then is used to test their service. So their tests are actually written on top of the client, which is really cool. It's kind of
super
wild.
Meta.
We're going to produce metadata about our REST APIs, which then consumers can use. And what we're going to do is we're going to make sure that everything works from the consumer's point of view, which is really cool.
That's pretty cool.
So it gives us an end-to-end flow. And basically, you can go out to GitHub today, go see all of these specifications in our GitHub repo at the Azure REST API specs repo under the Azure org. And that is actually the basis of this pipeline that produces SDK code. Mm-hmm. You get the spec in there, we see a job changes, then we kick off a generation with AutoREST, we produce code. So this helps us get like a highway, a really thick pipeline of code production just based on metadata changes. Mm-hmm.
And it's exciting to see that because I remember at one point we had a conversation with two of those guys, Dave Ebo and Ama Apple. And one of the things that Dave said to me, he goes, you know, what we want to do is we want to change our API, commit our code, and when our build runs, it just spits out a new SDK.
Yeah.
And we were like, dude, you know how hard that's going to be? You guys would have to make an investment in this and yada, yada. And then they did. So it was nice to see that. It's been cool to see the whole full circle thing. I wish Matt Gibbs was here because he'd probably speak a little bit more about that. But Matt Gibbs was one of the dev leads on the team for a while, and he kind of, I credit him and Justice with a lot of the work it took to get partners to invest in this stuff. So it was cool. It was nice.
Yeah, we're still in process. We're still working on perfecting the pipeline to make sure that code gets out there, you know, as quick as it possibly can. Hopefully, like within minutes, hours, that kind of timeline. So, be patient. We are still working on it, though.
I think one of the things you wanted us to touch on was if people are interested in contributing to the Autodesk source code, like, what that process would look like.
Can they help out with?
Yes.
Streamlining things?
Yes, please.
So in the Autodesk repo within the Azure org, we do have stories and issues that have been tagged for outside contribution help. So like help wanted. If you would like to contribute, we would love to have your contributions. If you find an issue and you would like to report it, we will definitely listen and try to fix it as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good way to get started is just pull down the code.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Exactly.
I mean, if you want to add to the documentation, add to the readmes.
Yeah.
There's billions of ways to get started. Any contribution is welcome, please.
And one thing that we did see is we were, you know, and I credit Jeff with like this vision. One of the things that Jeff Wilcox wanted to see was he could see that as the new APIs came online, like one would be purple, one would be blue, the next one would be plaid, the next one would be paisley, the next one would be 3D ink. Like, you know, you never had any idea what those APIs were going to look like. So there was an API board that would review all the mm-hmm. APIs. People stuck to the board guidance 39% of the time, roughly, and then they would kind of do their own thing on the, you know, on the other side. And one thing that we thought of when we started developing Autodesk was if we come up with a way to generate a client based on the API's specification, we will be able to figure out problems in the API specification that will result in, like, I don't want to say suboptimal client code. Let's leave it at that. And that totally happened because what the SDK began as was almost like a clone of the API, and you know, I'll say C# because that's what I use, in C# code.
Mm-hmm.
And when you begin looking at the C# code and the object models that are generated off that API, they're kind of bloated. Or at least the first couple iterations were kind of bloated. I remember this concept of a web space. The web space appeared in the URL, it appeared in the payload, and it appears when the parameters of the method call.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wait, why don't I have to pass this three times? And David Fowler came along and he was like, I really like this, it helps us automate things. Why do I have to pass these variables in three different places? So we go back to the API owners and they're like, oh, that was really dumb. So then they changed their API around to make it more logical. So what ended up happening was as we would generate the SDK, it would sort of expose opportunities in the underlying REST APIs, but then the partner teams could go back and actually modify and make it a little bit simpler. It's kind of a roundabout way of saying that if you're using these SDKs, and I'm kind of helping my buddy out here, if you're using these SDKs and you begin to see, like, I don't know how to create a VM, or I don't know how to do this, or I don't know how to open up a network port, that's probably because that SDK is an absolute clone of the API's surface area, and you'll maybe have found an opportunity for that API surface area to get a little cleaner. Yes. So
please provide that feedback.
Yeah, please provide that feedback. But at the end of the day, if you know the bad side of that, no offense, homie, is that if you look at the SDK and the SDK seems a little bit squirrely from an API perspective, it's a direct clone of the API surface area on the REST endpoint.
Well, so, and that's 90% true. And one of the, I think this leads back to one of the reasons why we built AutoREST to begin with. Why didn't we use just Swagger CodeGen? So this question gets asked all the time. One of the reasons is we had some specific stuff that we do in our APIs that's kind of vendor specific. But we wanted to make sure that we were completely within the specification. So it was REST specs that would fit the Open API initiative. In the great vision of creating these specifications, they also introduced the ability to extend the specifications. So you can be, you can make good specs that fit the spec, but also extend them to some extent. And that led into one of the reasons why we built AutoREST is to create things like pageable operation. So Azure has a certain way that it does pageable mm-hmm. operations. And we wanted to make really nice clients that you could get just a iList back, and that we would traverse all of that, you know, silliness that you shouldn't really need to know about, but is part of REST APIs. We wanted to make them closer to the a true like domain language, rather than just REST requests and responses. So some of these vendor-specific extensions we've added in, but we've also made AutoREST have generic flavors as well, so that none of the Azure bleeds through into something that you would want. You get the goodness, but you don't have to take in our opinions as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And the different kind of layers that Dave talks about is the we've got the like grab your swagger, generate a client for it with no vendor-specific stuff. That's the side Visual Studio was using when we do REST API client generation. And then obviously David's team, who's generating the SDKs for Azure, they're going to be using some of the vendor-specific stuff. One thing I'd like to see percolate at some point is maybe some of the Logic Apps vendor-specific stuff that we have to like show how the routing works. Maybe we could have some layers in AutoREST for that.
That would be really cool. How about you submit an issue on AutoREST, and
maybe he's gonna do that.
We'll think about adding that extension.
I'll talk to the Logic Apps team about it.
It would be fantastic to start the RFC process on that.
That'd be great. That'd be fantastic. God, he always has to do that.
I like contributions.
No, we've actually had quite a bit of feedback. I'm looking at you, Josh Booker, from folks who've said, we'd really like you to add additional support for vendor-specific things, like mm-hmm. Logic Apps, like the Azure stuff that you're talking about. One thing that Dave alludes to, and I remember going through this with Matt Gibbs for quite some time, is in Azure, sometimes you'll do something like, we'll say, create me a VM, or export this 30-gig database from point A to point B.
Yes.
If you think that API call is going to return in a timely manner, I'm sorry, you're new at HTTP. You know, it's going to take a while to back up a 30-gig database from point A to point B. So in Azure, we have this concept of an LRO, a long-running operation. So you send the request off, and you basically get back an ID, and then you can basically ping the API and say, you know, is this operation finished? Is this operation finished? Et cetera, et cetera. So wrapping that stuff inside of what you're going to get if you generate Swagger, or if you generate code from Swagger, is really not going to help you out. But for Dave, it's a life-saving opportunity because there's a lot of those API calls in Azure.
And using our REST APIs without those kind of things, I definitely can do it. We just want to make it a little easier for you.
Yes. You don't want to do that yourself.
Yeah.
That's why you use SignalR. Sorry, I had to do that. Which is another open source project.
It seems like they all are at this point. I mean, more and more, our GitHub repo is filling.
Yes.
It's, I don't know, it's kind of fun.
Dogs and cats are getting along. It's just
that's one of the reasons why I came to Microsoft, is to help affect this change. It is really, really cool to be part of it.
That's cool. That's really, really awesome.
Uh-huh. Awesome. I think we killed all of us there. I covered it pretty well.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Do you have any questions about any of that stuff?
I think we're good. If any users or viewers have any final questions, just wanted to say thank you again to Brady and David for their help and for their insight in AutoREST. So from Dizzles to Swagger to Flavors, you heard it here first. So thank you again for tuning in, and we will be here next week for our next Periscope episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. All right.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks. Thanks, everybody.
That's fun.